Welcome to the RICO 12 Speaker Meeting Podcast. My name is Justin, and I am an addict, and thanks to my God, the steps, and fellowship of other addicts, I am sober one day at a time since June 19th, 2015, and for that, I am beyond grateful. Welcome to the RICO 12 Speaker Meeting once again. We are an organization whose addictions include alcohol, drugs, lust and sex, food and gambling, codependency, you name it. We come together from all places, faiths, and backgrounds to learn the similarities of addiction and to gain tools and hope from others who are walking a similar path. We invite recovering addicts with at least 1 year of sobriety and who are actively working their recovery in their respective fellowships to share their experience, strength, and hope on a live Zoom meeting each Friday at noon Central Time for 20 to 25 minutes. Then we, the live audience, get the opportunity to ask questions of the guest speaker for another 20 to 25 minutes. If you're here live, in order to ask questions, please type them in the Q&A link at the bottom of your Zoom window. If you are hearing this podcast recorded and would like to participate as a live audience member at a future date, or if you'd like to be a guest speaker in a future meeting, we're booking in January and February right now for these meetings, please go to www.rico12.com. to learn more and to submit your email address there to receive weekly invitations or to submit to become a guest speaker. RICO 12 is an ad-free service, and we appreciate your help in keeping in that way. We are self-supporting, but we gratefully accept contributions to help cover the costs of the Zoom platform, podcast platform, web hosting, and administrative costs. To contribute, you can go to RICO12.com/support. That's RECO12.com/support. Or you can click the link to PayPal that I'll put in the chat here in the live meeting in a little bit. When you contribute, please specify the meeting number. This is meeting number 22. Last week's meeting was with Damon W. If you missed that one, all I have to say is that you must go back and listen to it. It was one of the most powerful presentations on controlling the controllables and recognizing what is actually controllable that I have ever heard. And it was super high energy. I've heard multiple people, myself included, describe it as, quote, holy crap. All I have to say is be a coffee bean. To learn what that means, go and listen. It's well worth your time, I promise. The cool thing is that every single meeting we have done so far has been one that has been very helpful to me. And I know it's been helpful to others also. If you missed any or all of the previous 21 meetings, you can listen to them in podcast form by searching for RICO 12 Speaker Meeting Podcast on virtually any podcast platform that you use. Or you can go to the RICO 12 website and find it under the link podcast. Now, if you have also found and find value in this RICO 12 service, please take a moment to go to the podcast platform of your choosing and leave a rating and review. It helps us work our 12th step by carrying this message of hope and recovery to ever more addicts who suffer. Now, let's introduce our guest speaker for today, Cindy H. I had the opportunity to have a quick conversation with her earlier this week. She is a high-energy, excited, recovering addict. She is alcohol-free since 18 years of age and a happy member of Sexaholics Anonymous since 2018. Her topic today is overcoming the elixir of codependency and sexaholism. The floor is yours, Cindy. Take it away.
Thank you so much, Justin. How long do I have? 20 minutes?
You have about 25 minutes until 30 minutes after the hour is when you need to be wrapped up by.
Can you give me a 5-minute warning?
Yep. I'll wave at you, or I'll jump in and give you a 5-minute warning.
Perfect. Thank you, everybody. Cindy, and just like Justin said, I'm a happy member of Sexaholics Anonymous. And today I did, all this week I was praying and asking God, you know, to give a message that is really going to be helpful to people that are suffering from sexaholism and also suffer from codependency as well. So for me, just like it says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I suffer from a hopeless state of mind and body. And without the 12 steps for me, without God of my understanding, without transformation through step 4, step 3, step 7, actually all the steps, I will go into that incapacitated state whereby I harm every single human being around me. Now, you know, a lot of people say things, oh, you're just a codependent. Oh, they just are just the people pleasers, you know, like they don't harm anybody. Oh, yes, they do. Yes, they do. And untreated, it is a devastation. They say typically that an alcoholic affects at least 40 people around them. And for me, I think it was way more than that. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And I want to read something out of the big book. So just to give you just a little bit of a classic definition of the 14 characteristics of codependence that I pretty much have memorized in my soul, because if I'm not in fit spiritual condition, I might go to one of those neural pathways. So for example, the typical codependent is, they confuse love with self-pity. They enable, rescue. What else do they do? They, placate, people please. Usually they marry partners that are very much similar to them. Like being an adult child of a sexaholic, for myself, I came by it honestly. So that's just a little bit of a snippet of codependency. And there's also other characteristics. So basically, it's like the alcoholic without the alcohol. So I was born, obviously, and I was born into the family of, I guess you could say, generational sexualism, generational alcoholism. Everybody in my family, they're either an alcoholic or they're working on it. And with my father was adopted, and I just found out actually 2 months ago, and I'm really grateful that I had at least 2 years of Sexaholics Anonymous underneath my belt. So I found out that when my real grandmother was 17 and my real grandfather was 18, he date raped her, and that's how my father came into this world. She stayed with him for like 14 months in a hospital and then gave him up for adoption. So my dad was a compulsive liar since the age of 7. He got into alcoholism quite early, got into, for what I saw, I'm the oldest child, is, Playboy books. And from there, escalated to, I don't know for sure if he went to online pornography. All I know is that my mother divulged to me that he couldn't stop being with prostitutes and, massage parlors. And even though both my parents sobered up in Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 12 years old, they both split. My dad died 29 years sober. My mother is still sober today, 45 years. So they broke up when I was 12. So my dad never showed up for like 3 years. He was a very sick puppy, and he was, going to so many AA meetings, doing the 12 steps. When he died 29 years sober, there were 70 people at his funeral that eulogized and said, if it wasn't for my father, George, they wouldn't have sobered up. So my dad is very much a big book thumper. And I remember one time, I was doing my sexualism, being with this guy and that guy in my early 20s. And he said to me, Cinderfella, he used to call me that. He used to hold up the big book. He says, we don't live like that anymore. We're sober. And that is what he told me when I sobered up when I was 18. And so my dad, kind of enabled me, got a jack, put this, just to give you a little bit of background, I was, gangbang molested when I was 7 years old to about 8 and a half, told my parents, that broke up that babysitting ring. And, and you just look at, it's like, we learn stuff. I mean, the babysitter that did this to me, she was raped by her father, uncle, and brother, right? So, she learned how to be a predator. So that's when I kind of developed Stockholm syndrome and just, started to be attracted to the, unhealthy personalities, to say the least. And I say this with all due respect, my molesting and all that, that is not, if I say, oh, that's why I'm a sexaholic, I could get into self-pity. I could blame other people. And that's not the case. I am 100% responsible for my illness. I'm 100% responsible for my recovery. So for me, as soon as I turned 18, found boys, became a predator in the 12-step rooms, one night stands, this, that, four common law relationships. I don't know how I fit those in. And just total disregard for human life. And I said to myself, you know what? If you had the childhood I had, you'd be entitled to have whatever boy you want, to do whatever you want. And so for me, sex and money went hand in hand. So for me, I guess you could say that, you know, the guys that I picked, I would pay for them, pay for their stuff. I'd pay for everything. You know, if they couldn't, you know, afford things, or I'd bribe them. I mean, it even started from when I was a kid, you know, stole my mother's purse and bought candy just so boys would play with me. Like just a raving classic codependent from a child. And then, so not only was I infected with alcoholism, sex addiction, bulimia, anorexia, self-harm, and, you know, deading the way that I was going. And you could say that I learned it. I was also affected by, sorry, the phone beeped through. I was also affected by the environment of sexualism. My parent, my mother had my brother when I was 2 years old, she had an affair. And my father, I already told you before what happened to him. So fast forward, what does that mean today? So I've almost, as a result of, you know, untreated codependency and sexualism, I have crushed people. I have devastated my mother. I frauded people. I should have been in prison, you know, with some of the things that I did. And all of this is tied into, what do I have? I have an allergy. I have a phenomenal craving that starts once I pick up a thought that I can control or enable someone, or I'm going to go out hunting and acting out. It's like this whole, you know, thing sets up in my brain and I can't stop on my own recognizance, on my own will. I cannot stop. So it's been 2.5 years since I've been in sexaholic problems. I just want to tell you, you know, what happened to me. It was my codependent sponsor, who was also a member of SA at the time. And I came through another S program. And when he found out that I was with a married guy for a whole year behind his back, while he was sponsoring me, he says, you know what? He says, you are so sick. He says, you're the type of addict, you won't even know if you're relapsing. You won't even know because of the how much of a liar you are. He says, you know what? You're making me sick. I'm firing you. Because back then there were no women in SA. And so I asked him 3 times to be my sponsor. And anyway, I've made amends to him. But the point is, I said that night, I said, God, I said, why do I keep getting fired by all these sponsors? Like, you know, why can't I just, you know, just get this together with my addictions? And above my right ear came the thoughts, it's because you're dishonest to the bone. And that night I realized that the root of my problem is I'm dishonest. Without the 12 steps, without my sponsors, I won't make it. So that was the greatest thing that he ever did. So fast forward, I've been in the program of Sexaholics Anonymous for 2.5 years. About 2 years ago, it was a male, because I learned a lot about recovery from the men in this program, because there were no women here. There's still very few. And he said, may I have your, because we worked on committees, says, can I have your cell number? I just want to, something came to me. And he said to me, I really feel you should start a Women's Sexaholics Anonymous meeting. I said, okay, I don't think so. I have no administrative experience and la, 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 and all this kind of stuff. And so anyway, long story short, I said yes. And for 3 months, we co-created with two male members of SA, this girl and myself, and we created the format. And fast forward, we have a Zoom call that's every Sunday at 7:30 is SA Jacks, and it's 7:30 to 8:45 just for women only, the first 3 Sundays of the month. The last Sunday of the month is a mixed speaker, and we have incredible speakers from around the world that are going to be there. And I don't know if I'm allowed to say, you know, who's going to be there right now. I just say, check it out. It's the last Sunday of the month. So what can I say? I want to end by saying, first of all, I just want to let you know that I am free of alcohol, bulimia, anorexia, self-harm, deading, and sex addiction and codependency as of today. I mean, I have longer terms than that. The point is, to be all addiction free is to be set free. So I just want to finish by saying this here. It's something that's on page 423 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's the last paragraph, and this ties in with the behavior, because this is what I want to just finish by saying, is that when I mix codependency with sexualism, so if the codependent hooks get me in first, the sex addiction and obsession will keep me there, or vice versa. So this, you know, going out hunting, which is not my higher power's will, like, you know, one day I will have a sober dating plan after I, you know, I'm just going through the steps again with my sponsor, Angie. And it's phenomenal because I don't believe in sexual anorexia in SA. I believe that, you know, between your higher power and you is to create a sober dating plan. And anyway, I just want to say to the newcomer is that there is help. And just like codependency and sexualism is a process addiction, you can recover. So in the big book, which I believe all the answers in the big book, is on page 423. And it says at the bottom, as I look back on that period, the person's sharing their story here, I realize how true it is that one of the primary differences between alcoholics and non-alcoholics is that non-alcoholics change their behavior to meet their goals, and alcoholics change their goals to meet their behavior. So that's really about it. I just want to thank each and every one of you for being here. If you have any questions on, you know, how I've overcome codependency or sexualism, I'm here.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Cindy. I really enjoyed your story. I think your story leaves us to really go, that's something to think about. And how does that apply into my own life? And I think it's pretty universal. Thank you for that. Now, before we go into the question and answer session, and a reminder to our listening audience, if you have questions or comments for Cindy, please type them in the Q&A link. It looks like two speech bubbles there at the bottom of your Zoom window to ask those questions. Before we get into that though, Cindy, would you mind sharing for about 60 seconds or so about the fellowship you attend, SA, and what benefit you get out of active participation there?
Sure. Sexaholics Anonymous, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop lusting. And I know someone just read the third tradition to me, it's a little bit more than that, but it's like just a desire to overcome lust in many different forms, whether it's lusting, euphoric recall, fantasy, masturbation, pornography, whatever your tryst is. And the great thing about this is that, well, so what I recommend is come to 6 meetings and to get someone, a sponsor or a temporary sponsor, to take you through step 1 to identify, because there's about 60 questions that you answer to see if indeed you are a sexaholic. And it's a great fellowship. There's a lot of really good sobriety there. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. I appreciate that. Oh, go ahead.
SA.org is the website to find any meeting in the world. And next week is the SIM convention, the Internet Marathon, which maybe you can pop in the chat, maybe if you have it. It's November 19th and 20th. It's speakers from all around the world.
Awesome. I will go grab that link while you're answering questions here in a few minutes and post it in the chat here. And then I'll also put it in the episode description in the podcast version so people can look at that. All right. I have a question from Brianna that came in. Hi, Cindy. Brianna, SA Jack, sobriety date, March 27th, 2020. Awesome, Brianna. Congratulations. I know you have had a strong and beautiful connection with your higher power. Could you please elaborate on how you keep spiritually fit?
Honestly, for me, because I suffer from so many different addictions untreated, that I have to be cognizant of, I practice what's in the big book. It keeps saying, when in doubt, when agitated or doubtful, say, thine will not mine be done. Thine will not mine be done. And so that calms me down. And also, the key, honestly, is being rigorously honest with my sponsors. If I can't get a hold of one sponsor, then I will phone it a recovered person to do a step 5, 6, and 7. I have to have, like what the big book talks about in page 28 of the big book, I have the earnestness of a drowning woman. Because anytime I get, you know, complacent and think, oh, I'll kind of slide. Oh, I got a few fears. I got a few resentments. No problem. I start relapsing behind resentment ever way before I pick up a drink or pick up an acting out thought or action. So that's really about it. Hope that's helpful. And I love God. And I love God with all my soul. And Brianna knows that. So thank you so much. And I love Brianna. She's awesome.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Cindy, for that additional insight. Now, you made a list of a lot of different addictions. You went down, I don't know, 6 or 7 or 8 of them there. I'm sober from these things. How did you make that decision? Was that a one at a time addressing, or did you take several of them at the same time and lump them into one time through the steps? Or how did you go about addressing each of those different addictive behaviors or practices?
Well, because I've been in denial most of my life, and I'm like, I say, a late bloomer, like I was stubborn. And so I addressed alcoholism, and I have been sober since I was 18. I never relapsed on that. However, the sex addiction, bulimia, and anorexia in my 20s, it almost crucified me. Like, and so for me, it's putting more into my step 4s and 5s from my main program, which is Alcoholics Anonymous, and just talking to people that have recovered from it, addicts that have recovered, and being willing to go whatever it takes. So before, for example, if you just want to talk about binging and purging, I used to be, locked 8 hours at a time in the bathroom, to coming down to, I eat 3 normal meals a day. My profession is taking off. I travel around the world. Like, I'm functional. And the only time that, so I think that's really about it. It's just, if I'm in fit spiritual condition and I'm always saying thine will not mine be done and working my program, then I remain addiction free. And actually, honestly, Justin, it's miraculous. It's miraculous. God could do for me what I cannot do for myself. Hope that helps.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Cindy. And I agree. Any relief and reprieve from addiction is miraculous, especially as we look back at, as I look back at my life in active addiction and where I was and where I've come, and God delivering me, it's a miracle. All right, we have another question come in from Nicole D. S.A. Jax, sobriety date July 27th, 2018. Awesome, Nicole. Question is, how do you know when you are lusting versus loving, caring versus codependent, and what do you do in that moment?
Simply, if I'm starting to get obsessed with another person's behavior and I'm wanting them to, if my part of my brain that says I start to have lustful thoughts about someone, like, I know right away that's lust. If I start to try to fix, enable, or rescue someone, that's codependency. If I'm genuinely, with my higher power's help, starting to foster intimacy with other people, which starts with honest friendships, then I know that's my higher power teaching me intimacy. I hope that answers Nicole's question.
Thank you, Cindy. Yeah, so I think those are some good answers there. One of the quotes, actually, it was your closing quote in your original part of the presentation about an addict. I'm totally going to butcher it, about goals and addictions. If you wouldn't mind, if you have that available, reading that again and then expounding on it just a little bit, maybe share some personal experience from your own life in that experience on both sides of that equation. I think that would be really helpful.
Sure. Page 423 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, at the bottom, last paragraph. As I look back on that period, so when I was doing all my acting out, I realize how true it is that one of the primary differences between alcoholics or addicts and non-addicts is that non-addicts change their behavior to meet their goals, and alcoholics change their goals to meet their behaviors. So I'll give the addict version first. So if I have a goal to go act out, right, my behavior is going to totally, you know, conform. It's like I'm going to spend X amount of money on outfits and whatnot. Or actually another one is that if I am not working my program and I'm rushing all the time, hurrying all the time, and I have a target goal, instead of like taking a pause, what I do is I get all addict about it and I get rushed and I make mistakes. So I adjust my all or nothing behavior, which is another codependent behavior, to get the goal done. Now, I don't really know about the non-alcoholic, how their behavior meets their goals. I remember this one speaker said one time, he has like a couple of normie friends. And, you know, like they could be having like a bad day at work, you know, like, or someone say a few comments and they just go, they come home, they sit down and go, okay, yeah, this happened. Then they just go, whatever. And they leave work at work. Not our types. Okay. I get a resentment. That's why I relapse on resentment way before I relapse on acting out. It's like, I'm going to get that person. Then all of a sudden my behavior is like nuts and I have no goals. My goal is just to get revenge. So that's, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, thank you very much. So Cindy, in your experience, and you sounds like you grew up in an Alcoholics Anonymous home where both parents attended AA. So you kind of had a 12-step background. If somebody, well, there are people out there that will hear this that are just struggling in addiction and don't know what to do. They don't have any background in 12-step situations. How would you invite a person like that, or how would you speak to a person like that to help them gain the courage to walk in to one of these rooms for the first time?
Well, I take them to a meeting. I would actually, well, I mean, right now, because of what's going on out there, we can't really, you know, pick people up and take them to meetings. So I would confirm, like, you know, I would reach out to them before, and that's what I do. I reach out to girls that call from all over the world, like all of us do, all of the girls in our group, you know, and by the way, we got a strong group. I mean, I love my group, SA Jacks. It's just like, you know, I'm not sure if I shouldn't really say names, but the girls, like they're administrative. They just know how to put things together. We have a welcome wagon. We have, you know, like a what's up and we just invite girls. And so what we do is we kind of temporary sponsor them in between meetings, like, just, you know, hey, the first thing you need to do is, well, they'll say, I don't have any 12-step experience. Well, the first thing you need to do are get your books. So I get them to get the white book and all of us girls do, and the Into Action book and the big book. You have to get your books because it's like that expression, it's better the devil you know than the devil you don't. If you don't understand your disease, how are you going to recover from it? And then to do the 60 questions. So really, you just befriend them. And walk them through the process. But meetings first, get a sponsor, get your books. Yeah.
Thank you. And if one is really hesitant, like, oh, the shame factor of this all, what if somebody sees me that knows me, those types of things, how do you approach those types of fears, maybe in your own life initially, and then in the lives of those around you? Because in my experience, that's a very real and recurring fear for people.
So on a day-to-day basis, I'm resentment-free. And if I get a resentment, I ask God to remove it. So that means that I have healed the past. The past now has been put back in the past. So when I talk to a new girl, says, oh, no one understands me. Oh, I got so much shame. And by the way, shame's a self-imposed emotion. It's like, I mean, there's girls in my group that could pontificate about shame like you wouldn't believe. They've been to shame workshops and whatnot. All I can say is that my job is to break the shame. So that's when a girl says, oh, I can't tell you what I did. I already did this and this. Also, I'll tell them what I did. And they'll look at me and say, oh, my God, you know, because like I was wicked. Okay. So they just say things like, oh my God, and you don't do that behavior anymore. He says, no, it goes, okay, I guess there's hope for me.
Awesome. No, I appreciate that. I also find that sharing my story with someone who is timid about things and fearful about things opens it up and makes them feel like, hey, I guess I'm not really alone. And I just had that opportunity last night. I got a call from somebody I'd never met who got my number through different things and was able to do that. And what a blessing that was for me. And hopefully for that brother, we'll see what happens. We got a question come in from Stuart. Stuart says, how has working the programs changed your relationships with longstanding friends or relationships with people outside the programs?
That's a very good question. So since I've been cleaning up in Sexaholics Anonymous the last 2.5 years, my boss, right? I work for a very famous celebrity doctor, and he puts me on a leadership team, and it's like, and because of my sexaholism, I didn't advance as much as the others. And it's only in the last year since I've been really working on my SA program that he's really, you know, starting to advance. So I don't share that part of my life. In fact, most people don't know I'm an addict that are my, you know, normie friends. However, because some of my exes have actually communicated with him, because he's also my mentor, he'll say things like, you know what, by the way, before you pick a guy, okay, you talk to me, okay, I'll help you with your goals, okay? Like, he's very carte blanche. And so I didn't really have a reputation, which, by the way, reputation, okay? Reputation is what other people think of you. Character is what God knows of you. And with my normie friends, which I'm getting more and more because I want to, you know, like step 6 and 7 actually helps me in my relationships with others. So if I do step 7, my creator, I'm now writing will you shall follow me, the good and the bad, please remove from me every single character defect that stands in the way of my usefulness to you, my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bit. Well, what have I done? I've asked God of my understanding to remove all my character defects. So now I'm going to ask God of my understanding for the virtues, which is patience, tolerance, love, you know, intimacy, like how to do those things so that when I go out there in the world, that my character defects are not harming anybody. And so therefore people start to trust you. They start to, you know, and it's a beautiful thing. So that's how I am healing the relationships out there. And it starts first with my higher power, myself, and working the 12 steps like your life depends on it. And also the other thing that really helps me, and I didn't say enough about this, is working with my sponsees, which I love my sponsees. It gets me out of self. It helps me to practice normal reactions, responses, and genuine love and intimacy.
Thank you very much, Cindy. A question here from me. As you go, you mentioned steps 6 and 7 in that conversation, in that little share. You also mentioned aspects of step 12 and many other things. But if you look at yourself and go, what step or steps do I live in? What step or steps make me go? Which step or steps would that be and why?
That's a very good question. So when I was not reaffirming my step 1 on a daily basis, that's why I relapsed after 2 years and when I fell to pornography. And I just kept, you know, telling everybody, oh, I've been clean, you know, and just sharing, I'm recovered, I'm this and that. And, you know, and just like, I wasn't keeping affirming doing the work. So step 1, I was not surrendering and reaffirming my daily surrender that I am powerless over lust in all of its manifestations, including the lust of the eyes, the lust of images, objectifying men, euphoric group. Like, there's so many different variants. And also fighting the sobriety definition. That was another one that caused. So I am powerless over lust and my life has become unmanageable. My emotions have become unmanageable. I'm powerless over codependency and all its attendant, and my life's become unmanageable. So step 1, I surrender every day because you know what? Under every trap door is another bottom and I don't want to go there. And so step 1, step 3, step 6 and 7 is what I've been really living in. And recently, 10 and 11.
Very cool. Thank you for sharing that. A question from Nicole came in. What would your advice be to the chronic relapser or people who have relapsed and are afraid to face the group or come back?
That's a very good question. Keep coming back and don't quit. Like, keep going to meetings And I seriously, I would sit with that girl and I would, you know, I take a look at their technology, right? Because I'll guarantee they're Facebooking, WhatsApping, Instagram, you know, they got technology going on in the background. Their phone's not locked down. And it's just in the beginning, you got to do step zero. Like in the beginning, and that's why part of the reason why I relapsed, besides not being fit spiritual condition, I unlocked my phone. And the person that had my code said, well, come right back and I'll lock it right. And I didn't. And then I had that mental blank spot. So that's what I would do, is take a look at their technology. The other thing I do, you know, is because I love all the new girls come in. I recommend that they go to their doctor, they get checked up, and just technology, step zero. And they go right into the into action book, and it's all there, and get a sponsor immediately. And also, you know, have other people that they can daily surrender things out. Because honestly, of all the addictions, like this is just me, sex addiction or lust addiction is one of the most insidious, because you can even have lust for alcohol, lust for gluttony, for food, lust for this. It's like, it kind of covers it all. So that's what I would do with a chronic relapser. Is first of all, you keep praying for them. You never give up on them. And sometimes they need more than just a sponsor. They need some recovery check-in buddies. And there's something missing in their program, and they just got to go through the steps again, especially step one. Hope that helps.
Thank you, Cindy. You mentioned step zero. Do you mind kind of digging into what step zero means? I mean, we can find the 12 steps of recovery and read what they are individually, but finding step zero and what that is, isn't as straightforward as the other ones. So if you wouldn't mind defining that, kind of sharing what your experience is with it and what it means to you, that would be great.
Sure. In the doctor's opinion of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about that a man's brain must be defogged before they can absorb the 12 steps. So, you know, you want to make sure that, you know, they're off alcohol for a couple of days so they can actually absorb it. And so for lust addiction, and actually some of the girls in my group, they know this, the science behind this way better than I do. Anyway, what happens is that the body is jonesing, right? The body wants a hit of lust. It wants to keep going. It has certain neural pathways that are built in, and it needs to unhook. So the only way to unhook is to do certain things that will help the body calm down and unhook. So my sponsor, SA sponsor at the time, he told me, which by the way, I recommend women with the women and men with the men. I do, like, this is just because there are no other women. In fact, when I did my step five, he had a woman from another S fellowship there. I totally believe men only with men only and women with women. Anyway, he said, you're going to have to do some things, you know, being alone right now is probably not the best thing, you know, like going to meetings daily, getting some magnesium, like taking some magnesium to relax the body, making sure that your fridge is stocked, you know, doing simple things like, you know, making sure you're doing your laundry, you know, talking to girls, you know, well, for me, it would be talking to girls hour on the hour saying, oh, my withdrawals hurt. Like my body's aching. Like I remember this one fellow, he said to me, he says, well, what day are you on? I said, day two. He goes, oh, pretty soon you're going to get the crawlies all over and stuff like this and tingles. And I go, what? Oh yeah, it's going to last about 3 months. Yeah, don't worry. You'll work it out. And sure enough, that's what happened. It's like, and then euphoric recall and these things, like my body just needs to detox. So I thank God that I had people around me that helped me give these little tools and tips. And that's what a sponsor's for. And that's what it's, and the other people that have done it. Hope that helps.
Thank you very much, Cindy. All right. Right now, looks like we don't have any more questions, but I would like to ask you, Cindy, if you have any final words of wisdom before we close up and then launch off into the rest of our day.
Sure. Just before, I just want to say about the technology part. Some sponsors are really strict. They won't sponsor unless the technology is locked down and they have the codes or someone has the codes. Like that approach doesn't always work with everybody because it'll scare them away. However, it's a gradual thing. Like for some of the girls that I've sponsored, they slowly but surely, you know, unhook the dating app or this or that. And it's kind of like a weaning off. And However, if you're got the desperation of a drowning, I think that's like one of the best things to do, because if you're constantly engaging with your drug, how are you going to get clean? You can't, right? So it's called sexual abstinence, going sober, you know, as you go through the steps. And so the last thing I just want to say is that thank you so much for this opportunity to share. This is my first talk. So it's been very enlightening. The questions, I got to say, were dynamite. Wow. So in all seriousness, I just want to say, like, this is a cunning, baffling, and powerful disease. Untreated sexaholism, most people end up with suicidal ideation or in criminal proceedings. And honestly, if someone is blackout as me can recover, anybody can recover. So if you're looking for a real answer, there's some really great meetings. The 1210 to 1250 Nooner Express is really good. That's on the SA website. That's here in Toronto. Our SA Women Jacks are really great. And if there's any women that need help, you know, it's sajacks2018@gmail.com, sajacs2018@gmail.com. And one of us girls can sponsor the women. Keep coming back. Just don't quit.
Awesome. And while you were doing that, another question came in. So we'll let that question get answered here and then we'll do our close up. So thank you. The question is Stuart. And I love this phrase here. In my experience of my hunter, calling it the hunter, and you did that earlier today too, I am trying to change the vision of my targets to being a human being. How do you do this? Change it from an object to a human being, change them from an object to a human being.
Well, I started with the men in the program because that's where I did most of my predatorial activity. Thank God I haven't done that for a very long time. Well, a couple of years anyway. Anyway, I kept saying, you know what? They're my fellow brother, man. They are my brother. And I pray that every time I go into a meeting that lust is removed and that God could and would if I saw it. And it's going to take time. It's going to take time. Because like we have to go out. We have to go out and mix and mingle. You know, we have to go to the store. We have to go here. So honestly, in the beginning of my sobriety, I just kept saying, thine will not mine be done. God, show me how to behave in public. That was another big one. Show me how to behave in public. And I remember this one speaker one time. I said, well, I don't know how to be around men. This is when I first came in. He says, when in doubt, just act professional. When in doubt, just act professional. And then also for me, I don't shake men's hands anymore. I you know, and there's no need to do chest on chest, like none of that stuff, right? Especially if you're a sexaholic. It's just total respect, and hope that helps.
Thank you very much, Cindy. And thanks again for being willing to speak to us in this RICO 12 speaker meeting. I think it was a great RICO 12 weekly speaker meeting for all addicts and those wanting to learn more about addiction and the recovery therefrom. If we didn't get to your question, or if you have other questions, please go to RICO12.com/forum and join in our community and ask those questions and answer others' questions that will come up. I invite the audience to come back next week. Next week, our speaker is Bill M. He's an alcoholic and he is a fun guy. He's from Boston and he's got a Boston accent and he is a fun guy. I think you'll enjoy it. If you've not yet gone to RICO12.com, RECO12.com, and submitted your email address so that you can get invited each week and in a single email each week, please get on the invitation list so you can join us live each Friday at noon Central Time. Now, Cindy has asked that we launch off into the rest of our day with the Step 7 prayer, and she has offered to say that for us. So, Cindy, go ahead and say that Step 7 prayer as we get ready to move on.
Awesome. And the sun just came out here in Toronto. That's just so beautiful. What I'd like to do is just like to, you know, everyone to join in thinking about the still suffering sexaholic or any addict of any kind. In fact, any human being, that we put them in this circle and we ask God to do for us, which we can't always do by ourselves. So together, my Creator, I'm now ready and willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. I pray that you now remove for me every single character defect that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. thine will, not ours, be done. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Cindy. Keep coming back. It works when you work it. So work it. You are worth it. Have a fantastic day and week, everybody.
Thank you so much, Justin. Bye, everybody.
Survive the storm.